Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey is joining us now from our office at the State House. Governor, welcome.
Good morning, Tiziana.
Good morning. Happy holiday season to you. And I'm thinking about the economy and your plan to really drive
shopping?
It. Yeah. That too, I'm behind on my... Wait. Oh, okay. So wait.
Me too.
How are you doing on your list?
Oh, terrible. I don't know. I find like this time between Thanksgiving and the end of the year, it's just like, it's just so compressed, right? So yeah, I need to get out and get after it. Supporting our local economy with some shopping for friends and family.
Nice. And I see what you did there on the supporting the local economy.
Yeah.
That is what we're going to talk about. And if it makes you feel any better, I'm sweating how far behind I am as well.
Okay. There's comfort in numbers, right?
That's right. Okay. That's right. So let's talk about this vision, the strategy that you are laying out. You really want to boost the economy. I read it, you know, I think fairly is all coming under this competitiveness approach you want for the state. It came out this week. You got three big buckets, right? You've got these fundamentals that enable economic growth. You've got retaining and attracting talent, and you've got supporting businesses. In this fundamentals section, housing, transit, transportation, they're the big pieces, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I've said for a long time now, the greatest challenge facing our state really is housing and lack of housing, housing that people can afford, rents, homes to purchase, you name it, right? So, you know, that's why I went big with a housing bond bill. $4 billion we're looking to invest through that in more housing. Transportation, you know, obviously I came in and we were in the hole there. We are making progress with GMA, more to do, but we need more housing, first-class public transportation. And then, you know, the exciting piece about this plan, and it's really the first time that an administration has ever done it this way, we spent the last several weeks, several months meeting with over, you know, 1,500 stakeholders, industry leaders, members of the public to say, hey, let's all come together, Team Massachusetts, put together a really terrific economic development plan for our state. And out of it came something that we announced the other day. And you're right, it's got these three tenets. One is focused on the fundamentals around, you know, affordability, keeping people here, housing, transportation. The other is talent. You know, how can we be a global talent magnet so that we're going to launch programs to attract college graduates, non-college graduates, immigrants, trades, professions, right? That human talent that has always been a special sauce here in Massachusetts. Let's nurture it. Let's grow that. And then, you know, there's a focus. The third component is on the sectors. So where do we really want to lengthen our lead and lead in? That's life sciences. That's climate tech. That's applied AI, meaning applying AI to areas like healthcare and education and financial services. And we give a significant degree of attention to our rural economies and also tourism and culture as a way to promote economic growth for our state. So I'm super excited about it. I appreciate the teams that worked on this, both inside and outside of the administration. And it really, you know, follows some significant wins. We just won the ARPA-H Investor Catalyst Hub. We're now going to host nationally, the hub for life-saving technology development and innovation in healthcare. We just won major awards and chips in science. You know, we passed $1 billion in tax cuts. We're, you know, making historic investments in education and workforce development, climate innovation. So I'm really pumped about this plan, and I hope it will be a roadmap for what's to come.
So that sets it all up, right? And gives our listeners a way to kind of follow along now in a couple of the questions that I want to ask you. And I want to connect that vision and the direction and the investments with some things happening today. One of the things that really popped out for me on the, we're going to stay on this fundamental side on housing. You talk about zoning as a key piece. You know, this constant need to increase housing supply. You call out the importance of this MBTA Communities Act, which requires some zoning changes for 177 cities and towns in the state that either have rapid transit or are located near transit. I've been thinking about this one because we've got the first 12 cities and towns working on their plans. Some are really kind of pushing themselves, like a Lexington that goes beyond what the MBTA Communities Act requires. Then you've got a Newton, which had a battle about whether going beyond and in the end passed just the minimum. I've noticed it doesn't seem you're using your bully pulpit with cities and towns on this. And I wanted to ask you about that because you might have a great deal of power right now beyond what offices are doing in the state to, you know, hold money or withhold money, et cetera. What about your bully pulpit? Because you get sort of one shot with the MBTA Communities Act to change zoning in the state.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go back to the point I made earlier, which is that for our administration, housing is the top priority. It's why I remember I did something that hadn't been done before and create a Secretary of Housing, right? Somebody who's got a team that's going to be solely focused on housing production. That's through preservation. It's through identification of state-owned properties that we can turn into housing. And it's about supporting the development of affordable and market-rate housing. We've increased big-time programs that are available to help those seeking housing in the short term. But importantly, to the point you get about the MBTA Communities Act, I think I've been really clear about this. I take enforcement of that law very seriously. I'm hoping that all will come into compliance. And I have said that for those who don't, you will see withholding of state money. In fact, what we did under our administration is we took the existing list of programs that communities weren't going to get money for if they didn't comply, and we actually added to that list. We more than doubled that list. So, you know, right now to communities, if you don't comply with the act, then you're going to see us withholding as a state money for any number of programs that you're used to receiving money for. And that includes, you know, for schools, it includes for roads and bridges, it includes for a whole host of things that are important to communities. So, you know, we've seen significant compliance, but we're not all the way there. The other thing that I've stressed is that it's one thing to rezone, right? That's important. What's important, though, is things get actually built.
Which
right?
is and the so that's, next step after, right?
Exactly. And that's why this bond bill becomes so important, because I also want to recognize we're in a time of higher costs, right? Everything is costing more. Inflation is, you know, is significant. And so we've got to work as a partner, as a state, with our communities, with our developers, to make sure that we are making the math work right now to get the kind of development going that we need to get going so that we have more supply so that prices come down. And that's why I talk a lot about our Affordable Homes Act, which is our $4 billion bond bill. It contains a lot there to incent and support the kind of development that we need as a state. And, you know, you and I talk about this. We've got 351 cities and towns. I just want people to know that our destiny is a state, and the fate of each and the success of all of our cities and towns really depends on our ability to come together, work together in this time, and together tackle what is the greatest issue facing our state, which is the lack of affordable housing. We can do it, but we've got to work together.
So you talked about making the math work. Let's talk. We're going to stay in this functional area. I want to go to transit and transportation. I was struck by your emphasis on capital improvement, that's important. You mentioned MBTA General Manager Phil Eng earlier. He said we're looking overall at a $24 billion spend. I know you could hear the collective gasp of the state from the State House when he said that. And I know you've said since then, both, listen, we don't need that money all at once. And this first phase of repairs that happened at the end of this year and through next year don't need $24 billion. But do you agree that that's the number? And do you have a plan for how to get $24 billion over time?
It is a big number. I think people, you know, knowing those of us who've had experience with the T and the commuter rail and sort of seen what's happened over the last many years and decades, maybe aren't surprised with that number. It is a big number, though. But what I've said is, in the first instance, I've got to take care of the now. I've got to do everything that we can to make sure that we've got a system that is functional, that is safe, that is reliable, and that is running at speeds that actually, you know, work for people, get them to work on time, get them in town on time. So that's why Phil Lang was asked to come up with a plan to eliminate slow zones. He came up with a plan. They will be eliminated within a year. In terms of revenue for larger investments in infrastructure in the long term, you know, that's a subject of ongoing discussion with the legislature, with stakeholders on this. I credit the number. There's a lot of thought that went into that. But, you know, it's going to take a lot of thinking about how to get there in terms of the kind of revenue that we need for that. But what I want to stress to the public, though, is, you know, I am focused right now on the short term, making smart long term investments, right? We know we need to move towards electrification. We know that there are things that we need to do. I'm excited about the $100 million that my administration secured from U.S. Department of Transportation for East-West Rail, important infrastructure there. But, you know, we're in the nitty-gritty of of getting our trains and commuter rails, you know, running at speeds and at times that work for the public.
So let's go to competitiveness and sort of the speed of reality. And I'm thinking about the talent piece. This has been on my mind, too. You want to attract world-class talent. You want to do that equitably. You're in the plan. You're looking at everything from growing people out of high school and sort of skipping the college track. We've talked about community college tuition. It's a comprehensive look. There is an August report from the Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation that raises the alarms about the outflow of people ages 26 to 35 from the state. Can we as a state execute on this economic development strategy that you've got at a rate that is fast enough to handle the outflow we're seeing in people ages 25 to 35? It's like, you know, back in statistics, I learned about stocks and flows, right? Restocking faster than you flow out. How mm-hmm. are you thinking about that?
Well, you know, I'll start with the good news. And that is that we have some really strong fundamentals in our state. We have so many young people who are going to school here, who come here for school. We have so many businesses who are starting up. It's exciting what's happening, particularly in the fields of life sciences and climate tech. We have some really strong fundamentals. We also have, through the budget that we got done this year, some significant support. Huge investments in early college and vocational training. We just made state colleges and universities more affordable, cheaper for so many families. And we've made community college free to people age 25 and older so that they can get back into school, into programs, right, for free that will set them up for jobs that are available in our state. That's the good news, okay? The challenge is we've got to make this place attractive. How do you do it? You make it more affordable. And that's why we need more housing. We need more housing, and we've got to make more housing more affordable to people. And that's why, you know, I think that you're highlighting something that we've noticed for a while, which is that cohort of younger people. It's younger people, right, who are leaving the state. And we want them to stay here, and I want them to stay here. That's why I've got this strong competitive agenda. I think we can, you know, do that through intentionality, through some of the investments that we've made to make us a global talent magnet. And that's why this economic development plan is, you know, one I really encourage people to take a look at and follow. The other thing we're trying to do is to make it easier for businesses. Talk about talent recruitment. You know, it's too hard for too many companies right now to get visas for employees, for talented employees, skilled workers we need to have here and stay here in Massachusetts. So right now we're working on that. That's a piece of the agenda, in addition to making sure that we have within our own office people who are going to be assigned to work directly with businesses on their talent recruitment and retention.
We're speaking with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey from the State House here on Radio Boston. So I was interested in the sort of the macroeconomic context, right? That was a section of this document that you've written about how you want to drive the economy forward. In the opening of the whole thing, you lay out how you look forward to working with the legislature. And you just talked about the budget that you got passed this year. Earlier this week, you signed a $3.1 billion supplemental budget, really basically within minutes of getting it from the legislature. But that was months after you asked for some of the money. It was a couple of weeks at least after they left formal session. Critics from unions to advocates for the homeless decried the failure first of the Democrats to get it done in formal session, then political maneuvers or procedural maneuvers by Republicans to hold it up. WBUR's Walter Wuthman has reported that this is the longest that lawmakers have taken to approve a closeout or supplemental budget since 1995. With that in mind, is our legislature an actual impediment to what you want to do for the state's economy, to the speed of competitiveness you are looking for, given its lack of speed that it is demonstrating on critical issues?
Well, I'm proud of the things that we were able to get done this year. You know, as I look back, and it's a time of reflection to a certain extent, as I look back on the year, I mean, the budget that we passed, that I signed, really, really important investments, education, workforce, climate initiatives, housing, tax cuts for the first time in over 20 years. You know, I signed a law, $20 billion in tax cuts that's going to put money back in people's pockets and make life more affordable for people. So those are positives. Do I bring an urgency to this work every day? Absolutely. The times, you know, necessitate that. People are hurting out there. Our residents need it. They need more housing. They need
better access to health care and child care. Do you feel it from them?
I think everyone understands that urgency. I think we all are looking at the same numbers. And I look forward to the year ahead and what we can do. I know Massachusetts, we can do it. You know, when we work together, when we work as a team, we will be unstoppable. We can get so much done. And it is the case that the times right now necessitate urgent action like never before. Making life more affordable for people here, attracting more business and more employers to Massachusetts, helping those who are in Massachusetts expand their businesses in Massachusetts. And, you know, we're able to do this. We will be able to do this if we work together, we work together on things like housing. And remember, Tiziana, it's also the case there's a lot of reasons why people want to live in Massachusetts. You know, we protect reproductive freedom. We protect health care. We protect voting rights and civil rights. You know, we're a state that's leading. Just look at the plan I announced on coastal resilience. For the first time, we're going to have a state that's taking a statewide approach to how we deal with issues of coastal resilience and, you know, building strong communities on waterways affected by and coasts affected by climate. So I just add that, you know, as well, there are a lot of great reasons that people want to come here and be here.
Let's come back to the supplemental budget piece. There was $250 million in it waiting to contribute to the state emergency shelter system. That has been deeply taxed. I know that it is a deep part of what's on your mind. I want to come back to it. The last time I talked with you, there was a protest outside the State House that morning as advocates were worried about the cap on families in the emergency shelter system going into place that hadn't gone into place yet at the time. I played you sound then from an advocate who was worried that for the first time in 40 years, we'd have families sleeping outdoors in the Commonwealth. So then earlier this week, our reporter Gabriella Emanuel was here on Radio Boston, played this clip from Liz Alfred of Greater Boston Legal Services.
We were seeing a lot of people in the airport, a lot of people in train stations. And we had some clients who came to us and had been staying outside. There's an email listserv where people are emailing each other. You know, we have a family in this area. Does anybody know of someplace where they could go tonight?
So we've reached the point where that's come to fruition. And I don't play that for you as a gotcha, but I do play it for you as a month later, here's where we are. Did you know that we've reached the point where there are some families who, at least for a night, are now sleeping outdoors?
Well, you know, in terms of where we are with that situation, you know, we have made every effort to house people. And in fact, I really credit the teams at Logan, the teams at working in all of our welcoming centers, our community service providers, who are doing a terrific job of housing people. And people have been housed, so I'm not aware of the specifics there. Anybody's happy to talk to my office about specific families. But, you know, I'll tell you, we have managed the incoming. It has been challenging. And again, I'm grateful to all of the service providers who stepped up, United Way, Catholic Church. I mean, so many have been opening up new sites and places. Also, it's been really great to see.
So just for context for listeners, the United Way had a grant program, $5 million, for nonprofits could apply for overflow shelters. Catholic Charities was the first to get a grant and open an overflow shelter, serving just a little under 30 families. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. And the other thing that's important, too, is, you know, I think we bring and we have as a state great compassion to this issue. It's
so
also
then, Governor,
the case that the
I'm
new arrival.
You there, I want to stop yeah. you there, though. I hear that from you. So address head on what we just heard from Greater Boston Legal Services. You know, you're saying they can reach out to the state. I know that. And I know you care about this. So when we are at this point now, how are you thinking about it, right? I mean,
we've been at this point. Actually, things are better than they were before. The numbers are actually going down. We've only had, I think, you know, the numbers coming into Logan have really dropped significantly. I don't know what that's about entirely. Some of it, I think, has to do with the weather. We've had families who have been staying and housed in Florida and in Virginia who left to come here, some of whom have now returned. So, you know, it's a situation that's very fluid. But, you know, right now I am just it's been really heartwarming to see how people have worked together. It's also the case that I continue to ask for the Biden administration for help, for relief. And I was joined yesterday by their congressional delegation in advocating for more funding for states like Massachusetts, who are really doing a disproportionate share of housing of new arrivers to this country. The other thing that's important, I've said from the outset, you know, folks want to work, and we have a lot of jobs to fill. And to that end, I'm really proud that we worked together with so many from the legal services community through the Department of Homeland Security, our National Guard. I mean, we had so many people working the last couple of weeks to get close to 2,000 people processed for work authorization, which is fantastic.
So let me ask you that, because I was curious about that. Yeah. So when you say processed for work authorization, close to 2,000 people, does that mean close to 2,000 people are now authorized to work in the state?
Not yet. It means that they're that much further along in terms of getting their clearance and their paperwork to do so. And, you know, this is a strategy that we thought would be really helpful, getting people working. You know, the sooner they're working, the sooner they're out of shelter space. And we've had a lot of support and interest from employers who are eager to hire people. So, you know, that's good. That's actually really good for economic development in our state and growth. And, you know, folks have come here fleeing just horrific situations, many of them with children on their backs and in tow. And you know, it's all about how to make a better life. And you know, we want to help them do that. So that's been really positive. Does it remain a challenge? Absolutely. Do we continue to call for federal funding from Congress to support us? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're just going to continue to work with our service providers. We don't want to see anybody, especially as we go into winter, we don't want to see anybody on the street. And we're going to continue to work to make that. So it's also the case, though.
I really want to shift gears for us on this, Governor,
okay.
and get to a climate question, because we've only got two or three
sure.
more minutes in your schedule. Department of Public Utilities, they issued an order in connection with a petition that you had filed as Attorney General in 2020 to decommission the natural gas system, meaning not only mm-hmm. moving away from using it, but, you know, getting rid of infrastructure to deliver it. Back then, under the Baker administration, the agency took up a petition and sort of it was favorable to utilities. But this week, they made a change. They won't allow what's called renewable natural gas. They want to remove some infrastructure. They'll disincentivize future gas build-out projects and more. Our senior climate and environment reporter, Miriam Wasser, talked to Kyle Murray from the Acadia Center, who said this.
I really do think that this is potentially the most transformative climate decision in Massachusetts history.
So in our last minute or so, in your mind, is it? And is does it meet what you wanted back in 2020?
Yeah, you know, it is. And you're right. This is something that we filed back when I was Attorney General. Our team filed it. And basically, you know, we're really pleased with it. What it does is it just sets us on the course to get to net zero by 2050. And it just stresses the importance of the need for all of us to work together, including the utilities, in a move, in a transition away from fossil fuels, including gas. And incidentally, it aligns with what John Kerry is talking about over in Dubai right now. United States announced that it supports largely phasing out fossil fuels. I mean, that's what John Kerry had to say at COP yesterday. And so we are in alignment with that. We are leading as a state here, and I think that's why it's been so well received. We had a lot of conversations, including with utilities and with, you know, workers and, you know, with climate folks. I mean, this is an area, I think we recognize the urgency here, right? And we just all need to work together. And now we have this order that's come out that's going to provide a roadmap to doing just so.
Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, always great to have you join us each month from the State House. If I don't talk to you again, happy holidays.
Hey, happy holidays to you. Good luck with your shopping.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. All right. And happy Hanukkah to all.
Thank you. We've just finished speaking with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey from our office in the State House, and listening in with us, Michael Curry, who is the president and CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, and Joe Battenfeld, columnist with the Boston Herald. They're here to give us some perspective on what we heard. Michael, welcome back.
Glad to be back with you.
And Joe, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Tiziana. Glad to be here.
So, Joe, let's just dive right in. Your reactions, first and foremost.
Well, I think I could hear a little frustration in your voice, but also I was a little frustrated that the governor continues to sort of dodge the tough questions. She comes on formats like this, but by and large, she has gotten by without being that transparent. And like, for instance, on the emergency shelter bill, the funding that they just passed, they have very, very strict reporting requirements. I'd be interested, every 2 weeks they have to report in. I'd be interested if she's going to actually follow that, be able to do that, because they've been very slow in getting information about the emergency shelter system out there, about like number of families and what they're spending and where they're spending it. And so that could be interesting to follow. And I just thought she, you know, the questions about making Massachusetts more affordable, about the number of young people fleeing the state, she didn't really answer that question either about what they're doing. It's, you know, except these generalities of trying to make things more affordable, make housing more affordable. But the fact remains is that people are leaving the state and, you know, we have to do something about it.
Michael Curry, your first reactions.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to co-chair one of her transition teams, and I know that we were pitching, not only the team that I co-chaired, but the others were pitching big ideas. So I think relatively early in her administration, she's pitching big ideas, economic development plans and housing plans, the $4 billion investment. That's what you want in a new governor. You want a vision, and then you want an execution on that vision. She's starting to put out a plan, I think, is whether it's climate, whether it's housing, whether it's how do we get businesses into Massachusetts, or how do we keep people here. This is what it's intended to do, create a conversation, create a debate, and then hopefully result in policy soon.
We're here with Michael Curry and Joe Battenfeld following up on our conversation at the State House with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey. So it's interesting. What I hear from the two of you actually is not uncomplimentary in that there's vision and execution. I'm hearing frustration from Joe Battenfeld about execution and addressing questions about execution. And I'm hearing encouragement from you, Michael Curry, about vision. So I'm just going to reverse the order here. Stay with you, Michael Curry, for a minute. What in your mind from the things she discussed will be the most challenging to implement in what you heard from her today, Michael?
I mean, quite frankly, all of it. Massachusetts, we're lucky in Massachusetts that we're not like many other parts of the country, right? She has, as you use the term, bully bullpen to create the relationships in cities and towns with local government to move the needle on transportation and on housing. And I think she can do that, but it's not going to be easy because if you've seen one town, you've seen one town, right? The politics and the challenges there. I think housing is an interesting one. She set the marker with her housing proposal, but these are long entrenched issues that governors before her have not been able to crack the code on. So I look forward to seeing how she can turn the favor, because I think she has the favor now. You made the point when you're early in administration, that's the time to pitch the big ideas and then win friends and influence people to execute on them. So I think that's really the challenge. Housing, the overall economic development plan, and then, of course, the transportation issues, which has so many folks frustrated across the state, are still top of mind.
And Joe Battenfeld of the Boston Herald, any piece of the vision there that was something you've been looking for or you were encouraged by?
Well, I was encouraged by her focus on affordable housing and, you know, holding towns' feet to the fire on the communities law, the MBTA law. And so I was encouraged at that. But she is facing a lot of challenges, like Michael said, about and resistance from local communities on that. And it'll be interesting to see how hard she cracks down on these towns that are slow in enforcing it.
Joe, she did address directly for listeners who may be just joining us and didn't hear Governor Healey when I asked her about the MBTA Communities Act. She did say directly to cities and towns, we will take away your money, right? We will take away money from you. Go ahead, Joe.
She did. That was the first time I've heard her say that. Be so direct about it. And in general, she's been reluctant to criticize a lot of things, especially I noticed the legislature. She did not answer your question at all about the legislature delaying so long the supplemental budget and doing it and under cover of darkness sort of in these informal sessions. She has been not really willing to take on the legislature, even though they've been critical of her in some cases.
Michael Curry, it did strike me that the governor did not say anything about the controversy around the speed or lack thereof with which the legislature handled the supplemental budget. There has been, I don't think it's editorializing to say, a decent amount of public outcry over how that unfolded. And that just wasn't a place the governor was going to go, Michael Curry.
Yeah, no surprise. I mean, for those of us who've been doing this, you know, this work with government for a long time, I tell my students it's the conversation behind the conversation, right? So the two of you had a conversation, but the reality is she has to still have the relationship with the speaker, the Senate president, the members on both sides, and she has to move that forward. So you have to be careful what public criticism you do. But I have no doubt when Governor Healey gets in the room, she's going to say, hey, get this done. I need you to get done. We have 7,500 plus, maybe close to 8,000 people who are need of housing in the migrant crisis. We have bills that need to be paid. So I believe that some of this stuff happens outside of the view of the public. And you have to do that delicate balance when you need to go back to them and partner with them on other things.
And to note, the wait list now of families for the state-run family emergency housing system is either approaching or maybe today will have crossed 200. Joe Battenfeld, so step away from Governor Healey for a minute. Where is their leverage with so few Republicans to push back in the legislature? Where is their leverage for speed or pressure on the legislature?
Well, as you saw, there is very little leverage at all because there's so few Republicans in the legislature. They don't have the numbers to sustain a real resistance. And, you know, they pretty much got run over when they tried to delay the supplemental budget and hold it up a little bit and make them force them to come back in formal sessions. They just ignored that and just trampled right over them. So I don't see a lot of leverage there until they finally elect some more, you know, Republicans into the legislature, or at least moderate Democrats who are willing to challenge the governor and challenge the House Speaker.
Part of the procedural maneuvering on the House side, just to clarify, of Republicans was to try to force the House back into formal session prior to making any votes. And as Joe noted, that failed. Okay, so Michael Curry, back to, you know, you've said you get the vision and then you go implement. I asked you what's going to be hard. You said all of it. One piece that we talked about with the governor was the Philip Eng's $24 billion price tag for what it's going to cost to really get up, get back to speed, not physically, but, you know, metaphorically with the T, and keep it there. Can the governor get $24 billion eventually? You know, you're the ones talking about, you know, let's talk about how it really works. So in how it really works, can that happen?
I mean, it's a tremendous feat. And again, I've been here with conversations with Governor Baker and Governor Patrick. This transportation issue is not a new one. With the heads of the transportation departments I've been in conversations with. The reality is this is a hard issue to address, but she can do it. And I feel confident whether it's the $24 billion is going to take really all these federal investments that have been available, as well as whatever she can push forward on the state level. I don't want to overstate that, Tiziana. It is no easy feat, but I do feel optimistic a year into this administration that if anyone can do it, the governor can do it.
Joe Battenfeld, do you think it's possible too?
No, I don't, and especially not in the short term or in any time soon. It's just too much money, and I think they would be better off focusing on making the MBTA more reliable, faster. So people, and encourage more people to use it. But at this point, you know, it's just getting people on the T and getting it to be a more reliable, up-to-date system first.
Well, Joe Battenfeld, columnist with the Boston Herald, Michael Curry, president and CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers. Really helpful to get some perspective after that conversation with Governor Healey. Thanks so much.
Thank you.